Hi, I'm John Ingold.
And I'm Sagar Baroshi.
And welcome to the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope podcast. Each week we open the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope book to a different page and we invite the author of one of the articles inside to come on and tell us a bit about themselves and the work they do and the article they wrote and generally their craft and approach to writing for games. So this week we're really excited to have Nessa Cannon with us. Nessa, hi.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Firstly, could you just sort of introduce yourself to the listeners, please? Just outline, you know, who are you? What do you do? How do you fit into the writing world?
Hi, I'm a game writer and narrative designer. I've been in the industry for about 6 years. I think I've worked on over a dozen commercial titles at this point. Most of them are indie. Waves of Steel, Only Cans. I worked on a game coming out soon called Forever Ago as a consultant. A few other things. And then I've got a couple of AAA titles under my belt. Mostly at Gearbox Entertainment on Borderlands, the base game, and the DLCs. And I started my career by writing a bunch of really weird little Twine games that got me some attention. So that's really, you know, what I started with. My roots.
Awesome.
Well, I love that because that is directly linked to what you chose to write about. Yes. I mean, that is a tremendous amount of experience to fit into, say, into 6 years of the industry. So we will have a lot to cover. But the fact that you started with Twine is a very universal thing. Your article is called Make Something Insane, A Guide to Short Twines. Would you summarize it for us, please?
Yeah. I really wanted to write about... Well, I meet a lot of folks who are looking to get into game writing and they really want to make like their Twine magnum opus as this way to like show the talent that they have. And I think that's a terrible idea because you really want something like short and shippable and out there. You know what I mean? Like you want people to know that you can finish things and that you are okay with people reading your work. And so I really wanted to write a bit about that. And I go through the six steps, where, you know, you mine your trauma for some ideas, you open up Twine, you write directly into Twine so that you can find kind of a specific rhythm. I talk a little bit about click to reveal modules and like, you know, how Twine is really special in the way that you can control the amount of information that the person gets at a certain time, as opposed to like reading a book. And then I, you know, tell people not to get too attached, wrap that shit up as fast as you can, because you want it to be quick and short and you don't want it to overstay its welcome. And then you can make it pretty, you can do whatever you want, but like you should put it up on the internet or you should put it up on itch.io or you should even just like take it as a piece that you can reflect on as kind of a jam-ish thing, what you can learn from it and what you think you can carry into, you know, a more professional or a more teamworky setting.
So I think that as a piece of advice for new writers, I think it was I love the article. I thought it was really absolutely clear and specific. And it had kind of covered the two core things, right? Which is starting and finishing being the two most important things. So uh-huh. I thought my first question wanted to be just when you're getting started on something short and quick, obviously you talk about this a little bit in the article, but how do you get over the activation energy of like, I've had an idea, this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you know when a hook is compelling enough that it's going to power you through? Or do you not know?
That's a great question. I think I do know. I think it's very instinctual. My first Twine game is actually a game called Jagged Bone that I wrote in a class. And the assignment, it was the final assignment for the class. And it was due in like 2 days. And I had written a whole other Twine game that I didn't particularly like. And I had the idea for Jagged Bone, which it's a haunted house story. And the first question is like, is this your spooky house? Do you live here or do you not live here? And then it splits from there and creates like, you know, you're a human in this house and there's a monster trying to eat you. And on the other side, you're playing as the monster trying to eat the human. And so it mirrors each other. And I had this idea, this brain blast 2 days before my final. And I was like, I have to make this. And I emailed my professor and was like, my assignment's going to be late. I'm sorry. I have to do something else. And with the other ones that I've made, it's definitely been a very specific, either thematic or mechanical idea. I worked on a game called I Knew You Would Find This, which the conceit in the Twine game was like you would click individual letters and they would all show up at the bottom in order and would spell something out, and you could click it and be like. And I think it's just a certain amount of passion that I have that I'm like, oh, that'd be so cool. And that's enough. Like, and I say that like it's so easy. That's enough to get me there. But there's probably like 20 ideas in between each idea that are not enough to get me there, you know? And I think it's a certain amount of passion, but I also think it's about having a really clear vision for it. And that's what really gets me there, is like being able to picture the end goal in my head and being like, oh, this would be so cool, dude, and getting through it that way. Yeah.
So do you think that instinct is a learned skill? Do you think it's something that you just sort of found that you have? Is it getting better, do you think, over time? Like, I'm always kind of fascinated by this because I genuinely don't know how projects get started. Like, I kind of go, I've got no ideas, I'm spent, I'm never going to write anything again. And then 2 days later, I'm like, oh, I seem to be in the middle of a project. And I don't actually know what happens in between. I'm always interested to hear people's experiences.
Yeah, I'm like the exact opposite. I'm like, I won't have any ideas for a very, very long time. And then, like, I will, like, be plagued, you know, and be like, oh, I have to make this thing. And I think that... I think it's kind of a learned skill. I think, but I also think it's probably a little bit of a mix of both. I think I read a lot of Twined games and I've played a lot of different varieties of them. And I think that when you spend a lot of time with interactive fiction, you can really find what resonates with you. And I think that that's really where I come from, is I do really know what resonates with me. Like, I can look at something and like pluck out, you know, out of Project Hail Mary, what my favorite thing about this is. And I could explain it pretty well off the dome. And I think that when it comes to ideas, I can do the same thing and be like, oh, well, this is interesting to me because people love clicking stuff, or this is interesting to me because, you know, I made a Twine game, like a Twin Peaks-esque Twine game last year for the David Lynch game jam. And that was interesting to me because I could explore a bunch of really teeny tiny ideas that I had in kind of an anthology-ish series. But like, yeah, I hate to say that I think it's instinct, but I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's knowing what I like and being so positive that I know what I like and hoping that other people might like what I like.
I think that works really well. I mean, it suggests that you have I mean, what's really refreshing to hear as you recount all of this is you have a real level of precision about these things. You kind of know what role that project might be playing in your career and your life at that moment, and you know whether it's kind of worth it for you. And if someone doesn't necessarily know that right away, I think it is the general truism that if you just lean into producing these things, over time your brain will make these patterns. So I think all of that, which is implied both in your book and in the explanation you've just given us here verbally, I think that's all great. The Twine medium in particular is really interesting because it is sort of it's more complicated to do than pure prose. Sometimes many games writers just say, you know what, I just don't want to do it with them. I don't want any barrier. I'm just going to go straight into a Google Doc and just like start to write in kind of my own way. But it's also rarely a tool that's used in full production in a company. There will be other things that are really similar to it. What role do you think Twine has today? Is it practically speaking, that is not, I don't mean just in terms of your own development, but is it the case that employers that you've worked with or studios are happy to look at Twine projects you've done, and do they genuinely look into them as potentially sort of writing examples? Or is it really more about your own development as a writer and you just getting better and having a space to do interactive fiction with?
At first it was definitely more of a personal endeavor of a, like, I want to get better. I want to understand what feels good in an interactive way, because, you know, that wasn't how I started writing. I was very much a prose writer. And but also I had a big interest in branching narrative. I've talked a little bit in the past about how I have a chess background, and I felt like that made me uniquely uniquely able to conceptualize outcomes. And so branching narrative felt really very natural for me to explore, and Twine felt like the best outlet for that. Yeah, professionally, I don't think I've ever used it during a contract, but I've gotten hired based off of my Twine games. I forgot to mention them in my intro. I can't believe it, but Endoparasitic and Endoparasitic 2, some of my babies. I started working on those because the developer messaged me and was like, hey, I really liked your Twine game, The Forest of Candles, which is the longest one. Nobody ever plays it. It's like a blight upon me because I still don't like, it's the one thing where I didn't like follow my own advice, and I like worked on it for 6 months, and I still don't like how it turned out. You know, but like, but the developer of Enterprise Setup was like, hey, this shit's great. Do you want to come work with me? And I was like, really? That one? but I've gotten jobs off of my Twine games, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on them. I worked on a game called Star Trekker, and they really liked a short story that I'd published on Medium, but they liked my Twine games too. And I think that from a hireability standpoint, it puts you a really huge leg up above a lot of people if you have work that you're comfortable with other people experiencing. Like, I think that we can be so cagey as writers, as like, it's not done yet. Yeah. And I understand that instinct, and I, you know, that's not to say that I'm without that flaw, but I think especially when we're starting our careers, it's really, really easy to be like, well, it's not good enough for anybody to look at yet. And it's like, I promise you it is. You need to let go of it. It's like trying to get a ball away from a dog so that you can throw the ball away. I think that even though it's professionally not super common in terms of like production, I think it's still a great skill for people to learn as, you know, just as a way to explore branching narrative, as a way to improve kind of the snappiness of your writing. I think that there's a brevity that when you translate from prose to interactive fiction that you really need to explore. And I think that it's just really, and it's not that hard to use. Like, I get that people get really caught up in like these visual novels that people make. I mean, people make like crazy, crazy stuff with Twine.
It's wild.
The idea of putting an image into a Twine game to me sounds like a nightmare. So like, you don't need it to be that fancy. You need to pick your favorite hex code for the text and maybe a Google font. And that's like it, you know? And so I think it's definitely worth doing for anybody who's interested in game writing.
Yeah, I love how focused you are about that, actually. I think speaking as someone who occasionally receives kind of submissions from writers, like my experience of it is people will always send you sort of four or five things to read. And the best applications are the ones where they say, but of all of those, please read this one. And they pick the top one, which is probably the most recent one they've done. And it, you know, it could be a Twine, it could be a script, it's whatever they happen to send. And like, we read the first three paragraphs and decide very quickly whether we like it or not. So it is brutal. But like, that, just having that thing submitted is really important. And showing that people can finish and commit to a project, as you say, it just elevates people immediately from the pool of people who say, I've got an idea, but I haven't written any of it down. You go, well, that's nice. That's nothing to do with me, though.
Right.
Yeah. No, I love that. So I wanted to ask about the process of making these sort of short, snappy Twine games, particularly the ones where you're kind of really driven by the desire to get it finished, get it done, get it ready. And how does that sit with the editing process? Like, are you editing as you go? Do you kind of do a formal editing process afterwards where you review it? Like, especially from a playtesting point of view, rather than just a text editing. How much do you play these things through and sort of tweak? Is that part of the, is it wrapped up in the creative process, or is it like separated, or do you go to playtesters first? Like, how do you handle, I've got it done, I'm making it better. How do you handle that?
Sure. I, unfortunately, this is one of my most toxic traits as a writer. I am so like first draft, best draft. It's kind of a problem, actually.
I love it. Okay.
Which isn't totally true. Like, there have definitely been times where I will write first draft and realize that it's not best draft. But I don't have a lot of room between like writing first draft, editing as I go, and writing first draft, trashing it, rewriting it. You know, like, there's not, I don't live in the gray area between those two very often. So when I'm writing Twine games and I'm like fueled by this fugue state of an idea, it's a lot of editing as I go, and clicking play on it with the click to reveal links or the links or whatever I'm messing with, you know, to instantly, that's part of why I advocate for writing within Engine, is it's so easy to, you know, click play and see exactly how it'll feel to somebody else. And so like every node that I write, I'll click play and I'll like click, 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 and then be like, oh, I need an extra one in the middle there. Or I've got too many. And then I move on to the next one and I keep writing. And then when it's done, or when I think it's done, I'll play through it a couple of times. It's actually a huge problem. I have to like remind myself to read it, and that it's not like a game where I just click on everything. Usually the first one is like, I play through to make sure everything works. Every click works. It doesn't, you know, it isn't a dead end. And even then, I've definitely shipped a couple of them where I have to go back and like, oh, I missed a bracket. But overall, the first couple of plays are just like click, click, click. And then after that, I will read it one more time, mostly for like proofreading. But at that point, most of the content is pretty set. And I don't know that I've ever done playtesting with my Twine games. I think maybe in the early days, I think actually with the really, really mechanically intense one, the one with all of the clicking, my friend Grim Bacaris really, really helped me out with it. And I think that they played it through a couple of times just to make sure that I hadn't missed anything. Because that was so... not missing any links was really load bearing. You know, it wasn't like you could click the other option. It was kind of a nightmare. And, but overall it's kind of an isolated process. And, I appreciate that in the way that it lends itself to speed. And I think that, I personally can get stuck in this feedback loop of, I will ask somebody what they think of it and they'll be like, it's great. You should publish it. And I'll be like, that's my friend and they have to say that. So I go ask my other friend who's like, it's great and you should publish it. And I'm like, you're my friend. You have to say that. And like, and so I try not to let myself go into that because it's really easy to be like, to lose all that momentum and be like, you know, I mean, it's fine, I guess, you know, and then not publish it. So I do my editing as I go. I try to make sure it all works mechanically. And if I'm happy with it after that, it's pretty much done, which is nightmarish for a lot of writers to hear. But it's just how
I am. So that's interesting. It sounds a bit almost like a workshopping process.
Yes.
Reminds me a bit of devised theatre or something like that. You just sit down, you're in a room, you're doing this thing. Okay, you may be by yourself on like a theatre company. And then at the end of it, you've got the show and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, it's workshopping is a good way of describing it, because I mean it is writing, but like I don't know that it's like polishing. I think it's polishing to the degree of which I feel that the idea can be executed, you know what I mean? But like I think trying to find exactly where that line is of like diminishing returns has been really important to me. I think that people can spend a really, really long time, and this isn't just about Twines, but like people can spend a really, really long time on something that's done, and then after a certain point that thing starts getting worse because you start adding clauses. Yeah. Where I talk a lot about, when I talk to other people about Twine games, I talk a lot about lingering and I talk a lot about vagueness and how using those, especially in interactive fiction, can be so effective. You know, you really want somebody's mind to race and to wonder. And the longer that you spend on a project, the more like your little gremlin brain wants to explain stuff and wants to like speed stuff up and wants to really make it all clean. And I think that being a little, I think I wrote that in the article, being a little freak about it is really to your benefit.
I'm glad that we've turned a little bit here to sort of scope and finishing and how you decide that this is all done. You talked about how you sort of pass it around to people who can give you feedback. I mean, I think there's questions relevant to our actual craft with all of these, not only to making games in Twine, right? Which is you won't always be in full control, of course, of an entire script. But it's not infrequently the case that you might be the sole writer on a project and like everyone else is busy and you have to figure out for yourself, like, have I done enough or have I not, right? And I suppose because you explicitly target this article at people who are trying to enter the industry or trying to become games writers, is there, like, maybe we should ask like a really simple question, I suppose, which is, what is a good amount of time to spend on something like this? Like, I remember times where I was trying to either get into the industry or sort of move roles, and I just had this big void of like, well, I could and perhaps should spend infinite time on writing my writing samples because I have total control over that and I have no control over anything else that anyone else does, right? But you've already given us some maximum. You were saying your 6-month project might have been too much, right? So should someone be doing these types of things in a week? Should you push out that sort of energy and that initial idea? How would you think about it?
Like most of my Twine games are weekend projects. I go insane for a weekend and then I publish them. And like maybe I'll let them sit for like a week if I'm really kind of unsure, and then I'll come back and I'll be like, this is great. Or I'll be like, this needs a little bit more zhuzhing up. But like I really tell juniors who are looking to start and looking to get a portfolio together is like a weekend Twine game. Like I know that you can do that. I know that you have that bandwidth. And like, I don't mean like a whole weekend. I mean like 4 hours for 3 days in a row will probably get you to something very short, very shippable that people will enjoy playing and play to completion. Because that's really, you know, John mentioned the reading three paragraphs. It's so real. You don't have a lot of time. And if you sit somebody down in front of your magnum opus Twine game, they are not going to play all of it if they are looking to hire you. They will play the first two notes and be like, and then they will decide, you know, if it's worth exploring further, but they probably won't finish this game that you've spent, you know, a year working on. That's 50,000 words. And so, yeah, I really like to advocate for like a weekend project, maybe a week. I think most of mine are under 10,000 words in like pure, you know, word count. Some of those are, you know, duplicates because some nodes are similar to other nodes or whatever. And yeah, I really think that, especially when you're starting out, like, if you're spending more than 10 days on a Twine game, you gotta lock in, dude.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. This is how I feel like I've done most of my early, like, branching projects, where it was like, if it has to extend beyond the time at which you are super pumped about this, like,
it dies in the water.
You're probably making a mistake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You're like, there's, because this isn't a full complete project. This is you getting into the habit of being able to get things out, which is half the point of it, right? Almost more than the point of the actual content that you put in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I think that's really good.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I find this extends to professional projects as well. Like, I always, somebody asked me once, how do you know when a game is finished? And I'm like, well, it's the point where you hate it and you never want to see it ever again. That's when it's done. At that point, you need to stop writing it because you're going to break it if you add anything else. But, you know, I'm in the position of being able to call time on projects.
Sure.
I think so. It's a bit different than a really professional job. Anyway, sorry, Nessie.
No, yeah.
No, but even then, totally, John, agree. Your projects have typically been a year or so. Well, they might have taken longer, right? But you're regularly putting something out. So you clearly applied some of that discipline to some of your own.
I know. I just start hating my own projects really quickly. That's why that happens.
So real.
Sorry, Nessie, you were saying something.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I just totally agree. I just think that, it's the second that it starts to feel like it's dragging, like it'll die in the graveyard of stuff that you never finish, you know? And I've got a lot of stuff in the graveyard that I never finished. Like, I am not, I'm not batting 1,000 here, but I do know when I can feel the stall happening. And I mean, that's true in my like contracting work too. I did a ton on Borderlands 4 that I had such a great time with. And Borderlands 4 has such a like comedic, fast paced, bloody vibe to it that like, if I'm going through bark sheets and I feel myself start to slow down, I know that I'm like bringing the pizzazz to the table that I need to. So I need to go do something else, come back, you know, come back with that kind of high octane energy. And I think that really fast, by the seat of your pants Twine games really prepared me for that kind of thing of like knowing when your heart's in it, knowing when it's not, because I think people can tell when your heart's not in it. And that's a point that I could extend largely to portfolios in general. I think a lot of people will tell you to have certain things in your portfolio, but you know, if you wrote a bark sheet just to have a bark sheet, people can tell that your heart's not in it and they'll scroll right over it into the next thing, or they'll close your portfolio. And I think that doing Twine games that you're really passionate about, that you can finish, that you can get feedback on, that you can get positive feedback on. I mean, I live off of posting fan fiction on my anonymous account every once in a while and getting kudos on it and being like, oh yes, I can write things. That's right, I can. I promise. It's you need that. You need that as fuel. At least I do. And I think it's really helpful.
Yeah, I'm reminded that I back when Inkle was sort of new and I was still not really writing anything for the company, we met a screenwriter. I think he'd worked on some American sci-fi TV series for the Sci-Fi Channel. And he said the most important skill for a writer was actually just being able to think on your feet all the time. It's that manic improv, I've got a very tight deadline energy. When you walk into a room and you say, okay, this is episode 9, and the person who's in charge of the show says, yeah, we're cutting the dragon, what are we doing instead? And you've got about 12 seconds to come up with an alternative, otherwise they'll fire you and get another writer.
That's like, so real.
His description of writing was so removed from like the lonely author in the garret churning out perfect prose. It was really just, you need to come up with 7 brilliant ideas right now, every day, with no warning. And like that manic energy, I think that really, really is actually an incredibly practical skill, and it's one you can learn through these kind of tight deadlines and quick projects. I'm glad you mentioned the work of in Borderlands and other large projects that you've done, because I kind of wanted to ask, like, how much, what are the ways in which these sort of short format approaches apply in larger, more structured projects where you're kind of less in control of the scope? Like what do you carry through? I mean, we've discussed a little bit of that already, but are there other things that you think you kind of bring through from this approach?
Yeah,
or do you have to fundamentally be a different writer when you're in that room?
No, I think that the manic energy is a thing that I can bring to the table that people appreciate. The thinkingness and the willingness to think on your feet, being able to have ideas. I know that you know, we are not the ideas guys most of the time. It's like, here's your sheet, please go fill it out. And you're like, okay. But like being able to fill that sheet out in an interesting way is really important. And so I think that like, I think that publishing your own Twine games or publishing any of your own work outside of, you know, a teamwork environment, it gives you a confidence in yourself that you really, really need. Like, I know that I can write words that sound good, that usually make some kind of sense and usually have like a nice little rhythm to them, you know? And I can take those things when I feel really stuck or I feel like, you know, really at odds with a client and be like, well, I know that I can function. Like, I am confident in my abilities as a writer, you know, and this might be a tough situation, but like, I have shipped things under pressure before. I have, you know, explored ideas after things didn't work out in my Twine games, or I have, you know, completely scrapped. I've worked on things again after they have been completely scrapped and had to start from a new angle. I think it gives you a level of appreciation for yourself and what you can do if you place constraints upon yourself instead of, you know, letting yourself fall into this magnum opus hole where you're in control of the whole thing, but you never finish it. So you can't trust yourself to finish it. Like, I think it really instills a feeling of confidence that you can't get from anything else.
Excellent. We've covered basically like the process and the reasons why you might do this. And I absolutely agree with these things, right? There is such value to doing quantity sometimes over quality, because it just, or at least thinking that way at first, because then what will result might really surprise you, right? Like, your mind might go in places that you don't expect. We had Giles Armstrong on for a call a little while ago where he was talking us through barks and through how it's so important to just like go for serious volume, because you just don't know what's going to come out by the end. But if you force yourself to just like output, things will come. So I guess I want to ask about the actual outputs that have happened, right? Like, are there of the projects you've done in this way, of these projects where, you know, you're in control, you kind of decided what they are, they're relatively short term. How have they been in genres that you didn't expect sometimes? Or did you find yourself starting with a nugget of an idea, like one of the ones you've described, and seen that they've turned from a haunted house idea to like a high school romance? You know, have these things happened to you? Like, how does it actually come out once you get your fingers on the keyboard?
Yeah, they're kind of a journey. I think I've published most of the ones that I've written. There've definitely been ones that have like died in the water where the idea wasn't strong enough or didn't work the way that I thought it would, or I would find out that we're kind of technologically past the point of worth, you know, like the skills that I would have to learn in Twine to execute what I'm thinking of in my head. It's like, this is not a weekend project, like, and I can put it somewhere else, but like, this is not, you know, I don't have the passion to take me through 10 hours of learning. Sometimes you just don't. So that's happened a couple of times. There have definitely been times where I've started Twine games and then realized that they're not Twine games. I have a short story that was published in the Horror Zine, I believe it was last summer or the summer before, can't remember. I wrote that entirely as a Twine game until I realized that I did not want there to be options. Like, I knew in my heart that there was a correct way that this story went, and that's how I knew that it was a short story, you know, and I pitched it around and I got it published instead. And I think that they don't really surprise me in the way that I usually, if I think of a mechanic or if I think of a theme, I usually carry that theme through to completion. But after spending a little bit of time with it, I do learn more about it. You know what I mean? I learn more about what it might be about. I wrote a very, very very brief one for a narrative jam. I think it was a Narrowscope jam. And it was based on a book that I'd read. His name is Marcus Sedgwick. He was great. He died a few years ago. He had a book called The Monsters We Deserve. And it's kind of about this guy who's writing in his cabin, and he's being hunted by the monster that he created. And it's very kind of abstract, and it's a little bizarre, but I really enjoyed it. And anyway, I wrote a Twine game that was really, really inspired by that, and I showed it to him. And anyway, in writing that Twine game that I really enjoyed, I really uncovered some big feelings that I had that I didn't know that I had. It was very therapeutic. And I think that that's really where I get a lot of the benefit from, is I think that in terms of like pure idea and direction, they don't change that much from where they come from in my brain. But like the way that I look at them changes a lot. Like that I'm like, oh, this is because I was bullied as a kid.
Yeah,
but you know what I mean? Like, it's you know, I think that you really easily find things out about yourself as you write these really contained stories that come from yourself. And I really, really enjoy that.
I think one thing that I'm kind of getting from listening to you describing your kind of process and how you interact with the writing is this sense that nothing is wasted, or at least like you seem to believe that nothing is wasted, which I really respect and love. And I actually think it's true as well that, you know, the work, the projects that don't necessarily go somewhere might turn into a short story later, or they might teach you something that you need to know later on, or like everything comes back. And that's true also of kind of the emotional development and just the being human part of writing as well. It's not wasted. Even if this project never gets finished, if you learn something about yourself along the way, then that's really useful too. And that's really lovely to hear. I wanted to ask another question actually specifically about sort of twine writing. I haven't done much twine writing myself. I write in ink, which is a, you know, a competitor.
I know, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for the vibe I'm bringing to the table here today.
it's fine. I don't mind. Twine got mentioned way more times than ink in my book. Do you find that you're getting more fluent with twine the more that you use it? Like, is that another thing that's not getting wasted? Like, are you becoming a bit of a twine kind of ninja at this point? Because presumably that must happen along the way, right?
Yes, it's way easier for me to execute things than it used to be. Especially after learning the click to reveal stuff and, you know, kind of learning some super, super basic code stuff to make things look the way that I want it to. It's really easy for me to open Twine and start writing. And it's really easy for me to conceptualize what may or may not be possible now. Like, I used to have ideas and find out very quickly that, like, doing it in Twine, like I said, just wouldn't be worth the time and effort that it would take. And now I really have an idea of like what I can do in Twine, what I'm comfortable doing, and what's worth the amount of time that I'm willing to put into it. And so like I can have ideas and, you know, there's like a little flag in my brain that's like, that not Twine. And I'll be like, okay, not Twine. And it'll be something else. It'll be, you know, or it'll go into a little file in my brain that when I'm talking to a client and they're like, we need a... Endoparasitic was a little bit like that. I had a lot of creative control over Endoparasitic, and I'd had kind of an idea of that I thought that it would be really fun to subvert kind of this by all means asshole scientist guy with his very... a gorgeous kind of ditzy assistant who ends up being the favorite of these god bugs. You know, like I thought that would be fun and interesting. And that was an idea that I'd had probably years ago that was just in my brain. And I think that the further that I get in terms of Twine, it's really easy for me to really like have an idea and instinctually know if it'd work as a Twine game, if I'd like to do it that way, or if it's not that. And also kind of how long it'll take. What the scene would be in my head. I think it really comes together really very easily the longer that you spend doing it. And that's part of why, you know, like you said, nothing is wasted. I think that even if you're working in Twine and you don't publish it all the time, the more that you know about it and the more that you know what you enjoy to do about it or do in it, the easier it is to execute that faster.
It's funny that you mentioned Endoparasitic. This is what my question was going to be, actually, because if I'm right, then that's one of the projects where you had the most control over the course of your career, right?
Yes.
Over what's happening. Okay. I wonder if we can talk a tiny bit more about it, actually,
yes.
About the two games in the series, and the way you approach it. Because what, you know, before this call, I looked up the writing samples you have on your site about these, and they're not, of course, they're not Twine, they're not branching projects, right? You're like showing an example of a scene, for example. To what degree did you use any of the lessons from sort of the sort of Twine world into these projects? You of course mentioned a little bit just now about like the speed with which you might come up with it or an idea that you had percolating for a little while. But what's different when you are having to say write something that hits the same emotional heart, but you know it's going to have to be voice acted. You know that there's going to be another. It's going to have to be visualized in some way that's a little bit bigger. What are the levers that go up and what are the dials that go down?
Sure. Yeah. Endoparasitic and Endoparasitic 2 were so great because I had so much creative control over them, and also they haunt me in my nightmares because I had so much creative control over them. and there are many things that I would do different. And I think that was a really, really big learning curve for me. Was I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't have the, how do I say this? I wish I could have taken more into account, kind of that I couldn't control the flow of information. Like, I've talked about how great Twine is because you can control what people learn and when they learn it. In a game like End of Parasitic, where it's much bigger, you find things at different times. I had to be really, really aware of, notes that would be found devoid of context from other notes. You know what I mean? Like, the first one was a little more railroady. Like, the idea is that you would find this, then you would find this, and you would find this. And that if you missed one in the middle, you'd still kind of get the gist, right? But the second one was a lot more hoping that the way that you could write things would still make sense devoid of context of other things, right? Or that it would be enough to make them want to pick up the next note. And I do wish that I could change some things about how I executed it, but I think that being able to write Twine games, ship Twine games, conceptualize like a point A to point B plot really, really helped me in the way that I was thrown into End of Parasitic in the lead developer, who's so great. He was like, I was like, what do you have in mind? What's the vibe? And he was like, I really just want like a by all means asshole scientist that we don't like. And I was like, you mean like the guy in the Reanimator? And he was like, exactly like the guy in the Reanimator. And I was like, okay, anything else? Any plot? He was like, no, go crazy. And I was like, that was really scary. But if I hadn't previously like completed projects, I think that it would have been way, way scarier. Because I think that a lot of people really, really want to be handed that control. But if you can't think on your feet with constraints, if you can't think on your feet with really wanting to impress somebody, then you're gonna die. And I would have died if I didn't have kind of some idea of how to execute what I could envision in a certain way. And yeah, it's just really, it's different, but I think that it comes back to kind of the confidence thing and kind of believing in yourself and knowing what your skills are and how to play to those. And if you've never explored anything beyond like your magnum opus screenplay that you've been working on for 10 years, you don't know what your skills are when it comes to like completing a project, right? And I think that those things are really, really important.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Like, for people coming into writing, I think sometimes they have this idea that a writer is very, very free, whereas if you talk to professional writers, their main experience is one of lack of freedom, mm-hmm. and frustrations with the boundaries
but and constraints. Yeah, exactly.
But that process of learning like how to create spaces for yourself within the constraint of the framework, and if that's like within this tool, what can I achieve without breaking the tool, without like having to like gotcha the contract that I've made with the machine or the structure, you know? Like, I remember when I was starting off, I would often look for the boundary of the tool I was using, which was a text adventure compiler, and say, okay, what's the most extreme thing I can do with this? And then at some point I thought, well, hang on, that's a bit like being a playwright saying, okay, how do I do all the things which break the format of theatre? Well, why don't I just learn how to write a good play? Like, theatre's clearly fine. You don't need to break it to make something good. And it's actually kind of, I see that in retrospect, it's like a lack of confidence thing. It's like, I'm not confident that I can do a good job, so I'm going to do something wacky.
Something crazy,
instead.
Sure.
And like, yeah, exactly. And like, when I talk to writers, especially in the Twine and the interactive fiction space, about their projects, the projects that always make me sit up and pay attention is when somebody says, oh, this is a game about two people having a conversation about a relationship, because that is the hardest interactive fiction project in the world to make, because you have to care about everyone and every line of dialogue. So yeah, I totally relate to what you're saying about kind of, you know, when you go into a bigger project and the constraints are completely different, but the fact that you've been through that experience of learning how constraints shape what you write and how to find space within that, that's really good. I had one other question as well, which we've asked a lot of the people we've had on the project. I feel like I can probably guess your answer, but I'll ask anyway, which is, they say the world is divided, the writing world, into pantsers and plotters, right? So people who plot things meticulously in advance and people who just make it up by the seat of their pants, who just fly by night and see where they go. What's interesting listening to you describe your process is I feel like you're kind of in between, actually. Like, you clearly do have a guiding light when you're writing a project and something that you're really working towards that's not a detailed plan. How do you find yourself on that spectrum?
I definitely lean more towards pantser, and I've always been that way. But it's not in the way of like, oh, I'll just make it up as I go. It's like I wake up with an idea, and then I enter a fugue state and I black out, and then I'm like, oh, here's my thing, it's done, you know. And so I think that I have, you're right, I think that I do have guiding lights, but like I don't write them down usually. I have a hard time with laying things out as according to like a plot beat list, or like if, you know, a lot of writers that I know will kind of draw the climax map and kind of figure out where things fall. And I think that then this is just me, but like if I'm thinking too much about that, that means that I'm missing something that it needs to work. Like I'm missing an idea, or it's not in the right format, or I haven't like spent enough time tinkering with it in my brain. Like if I get really, really stuck, it's because there's something wrong with me, and not that I haven't like plotted it enough. I'm trying to think of a good example of this. Is, I don't know. I think I just, well, Roadkill was kind of like that. It was my short story that I published. I knew that it wasn't a Twine game, and I didn't really know kind of where it ended. And as opposed to like sitting down and being like, here are the ways that it could end, or like getting into a really thematic basis, it was like, I wanted to think really, really hard about what would feel good to me. And like, feel good is a very, very abstract concept, but like feel good narratively, not necessarily be like, oh, yippee, short story's over, but like what feels satisfying and what feels interesting, as opposed to like, what is the natural conclusion of this? Or like, what follows this plot beat? Or, you know, and it's, you know, Roadkill is about this girl who's on this very, very tense drive. It's actually mostly a game about talking in a car, or a short story about talking in a car, which was a nightmare.
Absolutely the hardest.
But then they hit something in the road, and this thing that they hit is a different version of her, who is like kind of trying to convince her to kill her boyfriend. And spoiler alert, she does kill her boyfriend. She pushes him off a cliff. And to arrive at that point was very, very difficult, because it felt like, I didn't have the trust that I had written the story well enough to gain the trust of the audience that like, that was the correct thing to do, or that that would feel good in this ambiguous sense to the audience. And so that wasn't a point that I arrived to by plotting. It was a point that I arrived to by feeling, by pantsing over and over again of like, what feels good, what feels good, what feels good, and kind of landing there. And so, yeah, I guess I am kind of in the middle, but in a very new agey, weird way of like, have you thought about your feelings?
So it feels to me like almost what you're describing is a process of pantsing, but at different scales, at different times
over
of the project.
Again.
So at one moment you might be pantsing a line of dialogue, and the next minute you're pantsing what's going to happen in the next scene, or something, and then sort of drilling up and down in terms of the scale that you're thinking of at any given time.
Yeah, and then it'll flow really well, and then it'll stop, and I'll be like, okay, what are we doing here? And then it'll flow again, and then it'll stop. Or it'll just, you know, like I said, fugue state, wake up, and it's done.
Okay, so we now need a third category. We've got pantsers, plotters, and those who are just graced by the muse.
The Nessa category.
Plagued by the voices in their head? Yes, that's me.
That's awesome.
No, this is very good, Nessa. Nessa, we've covered a bunch of different topics here, and you've shown that you've thought so carefully about this and have been able to execute this in so many different contexts. I think this is a nice, full, complete exploration for and defense of why people should be doing small, short projects in Twine or in Ink or somewhere else.
Yes.
and doing it by feel. I love that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not getting too hung up on the details, but just finding their way through. I think that's...
Yes.
That's,
yeah, really, it's really about trusting yourself. And I think that that's really hard for people to learn how to do. And I'm still learning. This is how I'm learning. Some people learn through much more normal, well-adjusted means. And this is just how I picked.
By actually doing the writing, which is which is something to laud, I think.
I mean, it's clearly working out for you. So if it works,
I'm doing my best.
I guess that's the right thing to do. Amazing. Okay, well, let's wrap it up there. Thank you so much for talking to us, Nessa. That's been really, really brilliant. Listeners, please join us again next week, where we'll have another multi-talented, interdisciplinary, luminary game writer on to discuss the craft of interactive writing. But until then, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for having me. Thank you.